Well, we were talking about the Lorca variations and your being in New York City. Not only were you there when it happened, but it's also your hometown. So tremendous feelings about that. They talked about potentially flying a plane into the Sears Tower in Chicago, the tallest building in the country, which is my hometown. So just even the thought of that happening just really affects me in a very deep cellular level. And another poem which... Well, in a sense, is also prophetic, is called Lorca Variation 19, In a Time of War. And, poetry and war go back many, many years before they're even, but when poetry was just a spoken act. So,
yeah, including poets I can think of who write poetry in favor of war.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to give poets a completely clean slate as...
Right.
But maybe
reading that poem to give us a start for this section of the interview.
The words are taken from, the nouns are taken from a translation that I did of poetry of Federico García Lorca, who himself was a victim of a war. The Lorca Variations 19, In a Time of War. Snuffed out in mind or heart, the war sucks up the dew, dries out the spring, the water thickens, daisies wilt. A stone drops through a dark lake near a silver mountain, nightingales lie dead. A tremor uproots three black trees, uproots the memory of trees and oxen, the poppies from another war, another homeland. War makes a prison house, a thousand cells crisscross in a universe we enter down a single road. A widow in the darkness gathers roots, the slender stem of an acacia curving in the love she brings, a love that floats like butterflies over the road to war. Inside the glass, a crystal moon lives. War will shatter into flowers in the endless night. Once the night grew tamer, once the stars destroyed by war, inside their hive fled to the open air. Moon, acacia, water, lily, star, even a year of war won't hide or tame them. War waiting in the gateway to the hive.
Lorca Variations number 19, In a Time of War, Jerome Rothenberg, the poet reading from his work. Let's go to the anthology work. Poems for the Millennium, for me, is just absolutely amazing and overwhelming. I don't consider myself a scholar, so perhaps that's part of it, but it's just an incredible document and something that someone could go over literally for the rest of their life and still continue to get richness from it. Can you tell us about how that project was initiated?
Well, it was something that was brewing in my mind for a long time, and I think maybe 12, maybe 15 years before, actually getting a contract to do the work, I had begun to propose something like it to to publishers that I had worked with. I've been given to making anthologies for some time, seeing the anthology as a kind of massive assemblage, an epic work that I could create from many different resources. Always with the idea not to do an anthology that was a recapitulation of other anthologies that were themselves recapitulations of other anthologies, but the anthology as an instrument for presenting work that had been ignored, set aside, or even despised by literary communities and others. Or as I once wrote about, why I write poetry, that I try to write poems which are necessary to me, and which have not existed otherwise. I try to make anthologies that have not existed otherwise, and for which I feel a real need, a real necessity. My sense was that wherever I looked, the assessment of the 20th century, which was then moving towards closure, had slighted what seemed to me to be some of the most important products as poems of the 20th century, that the books had it wrong, or I think at a certain point in the 20th century weren't even trying to make a general assessment. It's difficult to bring 100 years of poetry or anything else into a single place, a single book. So I thought it was still important in our time, not to let that part of the near past slip away without making some statement on my behalf and on behalf of other poets with whom I worked, some statement about how we really saw the poetry of the century. So I thought I was not just speaking for myself, but speaking for others, and I think that actually was true.
And specifically addressing the folks who I mentioned in at the beginning of our William Harmon talking about the best work of the 20th century in writing is in prose. Mm-hmm. So you're in a sense addressing folks with that point of view.
And I think it was the 20th century, which continues to be continued into the 21st, was an extraordinary century for poetry. It was certainly my century. I'm happy to have made it into the 21st century. Paul, for you, for me, we are people who have spent our lives in what was called the 20th century.
Yeah, and that makes it a difficult situation for you, or could be a difficult situation, because here you are looking back at the 20th century, at the different schools and the different writers from that era, trying to carve out what you thought was the essence and probably making some difficult decisions. And you yourself are one of the leading figures of the American avant-garde of the 20th century. So very difficult where you have to put yourself in, not only as someone looking at the 20th century, but an active and vibrant participant in it. So was that difficult for you?
Yes and no. This is not the first anthology that I've done, and preceding the anthologies, I've been the publisher editor of three or four little magazines, and early along, I and some others. In fact, at one point, everybody had a magazine. It was a time in the 1960s. I hardly knew a poet who didn't have a magazine or wasn't on the board of some magazine. And of course, the question came up: do we publish ourselves? Are we that totally self-effacing? That we just put ourselves out of the picture and act as the objective selectors. But we didn't really didn't think that would the point was that we were a part of whatever we did so when it came to the anthologies also you come up against that do I put myself into it? Well, I'm into it anyway.
The notion of objectivity, I think, is something that maybe was strongly considered in the 20th, reconsidered in the 20th century. I mean, Heisenberg talking about how if you are viewing an experiment, you're having an effect on it. So the notion of objectivity is really kind of ludicrous.
I also thought there was something in particularly as we came to the second volume of Poems for the Millennium, we have come into our own time. This is the time that I became a poet, and Pierre Joris became a poet, most of the poets that I know became, poets. But, present that part of the 20th century, that part of my lifetime, without, being quite frank about myself as a participant in it.
Can't be done.
The more difficult thing, of course, was that some number of poets could not be, because you know, there are, big as those books are, you know, there are limits, and you end up making some bad decisions. You know, ultimately, I think I once said, you know, we would like you know, to put out an anthology of everybody, you know, that you know, but that exists, you know, perhaps in the mind of God, you know, but there's no way of getting a publisher to you know, to consider doing it.